This episode of the Red and White Podcast is brought to you by Roback, roback.com, performance apparel company. They make polos, hoodies, Q-zips that are legit just the best fit and the best feel. I know you've seen the little dog logo on people's shoulders. That's Roback. They gave you a 20% off coupon if you use the code REDWHITE. So go support the sponsors of the podcast. Go get yourself some sick apparel. And thanks for listening. I was raised by the wolves. I was raised by the wolves. I was raised by the wolves. 8:34. Run through the night. All right, folks, we are back with another edition of the Red and White Podcast post game report. But unfortunately, we have to talk about the West Coast elephant in the room. ACC has voted to expand with Cal, Stanford, and SMU. Somebody flipped their vote, and ESPN is reporting that it's us. I have reached out to the chancellor's office yet again just to see if they will give me a response, and I'm guessing no. But here we are. The ACC is now on the West Coast in a extremely reactionary move that I just do not understand. And I after thinking about this, you know, we've talked about it a lot. Podcast's been talking about it. Twitter's been talking about it. After thinking about it for a little while this morning, my biggest issue with all of it is that these folks, leaders, presidents, chancellors, athletic directors, are all in charge of a $1 billion business. Because that's what it is, $1 billion business, and they just make reactionary moves. Can you imagine if a Fortune 100 company acted the same way?
I think a lot do.
Well, that's probably true, right? Mainly because they're slow. You're probably right. Amazon, for example, would not be reactionary. They're building for the future. They're building future plans. Everything is a stepping stone for the next.
That's a great example, because I'm pretty sure they looked at that Pac-12 TV deal and they probably were like, nope.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right. I mean, it's so frustrating to me that these folks continue to make these decisions in a manner that is clearly not good for the student athletes, clearly not good for the fans and just the state of sports in general. But they see dollar signs, man. People's pockets are getting fatter. We need more money. And then they're going to come around and they're going to ask you for more money. You know, hey, donate. You know, you love your school, donate. Come on, man. It's to me, it's so disingenuous. It's a really poorly run $1 billion business. All these universities are overinflated. I don't get it. I get it, but I don't get it, right? And it's just stupid. I'm tired of talking about it. It doesn't make any sense, but it doesn't have to make sense, because the leaders who are making these decisions are so disconnected from reality that this is what they want. They're making it what's best for them, right? We saw this before when they keep voting for the same NCAA leadership approved by the presidents, despite the fact that the NCAA has no leadership. Right? Like, oh yeah, Mark Emmert, let's renew his contract. Let's keep him on. And you're like, why would you do something like that? Who is looking after the state of college athletics? I don't think anybody.
Oh, well, I feel like we said this at the time, that like Mark Emmert type things like that, that was clearly a currying favor to try to not get smashed by the NCAA hammer from the Dennis Smith scandal.
I guess.
Like, if you look at it all in a how does this help NC State vacuum, it's always the simplest thing. We're trying to avoid a penalty, or we're trying to just get money. We don't know what the future is. We think we can land in another conference, but if we don't, let's get, I don't know, $3 million extra a year. Like, I mean, that's what's so funny about this is it's like, I know it's important, because if TV deals weren't important, then the SEC and others wouldn't be doing stupid shit like blowing up football. But man, it does not seem like mathematically this works out unless. And again, I haven't seen anywhere reported. Like, Stanford and Notre Dame have pretty much like an ongoing scheduled rivalry for like 30 some years up to this point. Is that going to count as one of their ACC games? Like, did we do this and literally say, oh, and 1/5 of the ACC Notre Dame inventory is going to go to Stanford? Like,
that would
be really stupid.
I wouldn't put it past people for doing that, right? I mean, I really think that there is, or had to not, maybe the better way to say is that I wouldn't put it past them for not actually thinking about that, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's like, why do you assume it's NC State? And I'm like, well, if history tells us anything and about our leadership's decision and doing what's right, it's probably safe to assume that we were the ones that flipped.
Yeah.
Carolina came out yesterday and during our game, which I think is no coincidence, and put out a statement that said, we directly oppose this, blah, blah, blah.
I guarantee that was like, they just did a straw poll and it was very clear at that point that NC State was going to flip. And so that's probably why they said that. And they wanted to maybe just be on record. Like, I mean, here's the thing. If I'm Florida State, Clemson, UNC, or frankly, NC State, you guys said you wanted more money. It looks really stupid because it's the worst competition to be adding to the mix as far as like how this helps your brand. But it's probably the only teams you could add and actually get more money, because ESPN wasn't opening the deal to negotiate higher amounts for Oregon and Washington. I mean, I think the ACC was basically like, you know what? This looks really stupid optically. It's going to be more money. And quite frankly, I don't care about, someone's got to fly across and fly here. Like, you still fly. It's a lot of time still going from Raleigh to Boston.
Miami, it's not.
I think they said it was one time a year. I mean, I think they said it was going to be every other year. Maybe they only have to fly out once to California. So,
but that's just for football, right? I mean, the point is, are you sending your baseball team out there? Are you sending your field hockey team out there?
They probably are. And you know what? That. Like, I don't understand why everyone's making a big deal about this. It's like,
breaking news. I got a response from the chancellor's office. Here's Chancellor Woodson's statement.
Hold on. Can I guess? Is it stop talking shit about me on your podcast?
No, it should be. The NC State brand and historical competitiveness of our programs is already well recognized and established. The addition of these outstanding universities gives us even greater opportunities to build on the Wolfpack's national presence, which in turn will generate more long-term benefits for our student athletes, athletic programs, and loyal fan base.
Okay. So, California recruits.
Yeah.
Texas recruits.
Oh, yeah. We're going to land a lot of California recruits.
Well, who knows? Maybe it does kind of open up slightly. But I guess here's what I was going to say is I'm not going to like go boo-hoo for college athletes getting to go travel out and play in the Bay Area, in Berkeley, in Dallas. Like, everyone's making it seem like this is this huge travesty. It's like, cool, man, you're already flying to Boston. You're already flying to Louisville. You're already going all over the East Coast. It's a couple more hours travel. I mean, you know what? I remember when I was in college, I would have thought it would be effing awesome to go out to the West Coast. So I don't buy this, oh, it's so tough on the athletes. I don't care. And quite frankly, you know what the next step is. They're going to reduce non-rev sports, right? Like, are you going to be shocked if something gets cut in the near term
No, to answer your question, no, it wouldn't. No.
You know, and so I would expect what's going to happen is you're going to either cut teams or you're going to reduce some, investment, and you're going to keep cashing these checks. Because, the better question is, what are you doing with this money? Why was this money so important? Are you going to stockpile a war chest? Are you going to invest in more staff? Are you going to pay players? Like, I don't know, man. But if I'm FSU or Clemson and I pipe off to the ACC that this is stupid, I would go right back to them and be like, you guys were just running your mouths about how you needed extra money. Here's the only extra money you can get. And if you go to the national championship game, you're going to get $10 million, $15 million, whatever it is, right? And say, put your money where your mouth is. Everyone else is going to take the money. And then, I don't know, not until 2030 do I see an opportunity for any real change. That's when the Big 12 deal is going to be up. And then you might see, I think that Big Ten deal is also up for renegotiation in 2030 or 2031. And that's when you're going to see the movement. So why not cash checks for 6 years, 7 years? It's only another 20, 25 million bucks, but maybe that's important to everyone that's not named Clemson.
I was really hoping that was Clemson that flipped.
I know. Wouldn't that be sweet?
The revenue model, you know, they wanted the revenue share.
I just don't get why UNC, I mean, what's UNC's concern? That it's going to be harder to dissolve the ACC in 5 years because of this? It doesn't matter. If it's anywhere close to dissolving, it's going to dissolve. And if there's a way out of the grant of rights, you're going to take it anyways. And if you're those three teams and you're gung-ho about leaving the ACC, the best you could do is say, okay, I guess I'm going to sign up and get more money. And then when the three of us leave, the ACC deal doesn't explode because of the reneg requirement. I guess they were saying if it's less than 15 teams, the ACC ESPN deal can be restructured in a negative way.
It's so exhausting, right?
It is. It's so stupid.
It's stupid. And like, I'm not sure if I even care anymore to that degree, right? I mean, it's because I'm expecting the worst. And like, it's changing so much. I don't know. And clearly people are making decisions that are not with the best interest of the sports, the students, et cetera. Yeah. Right. I'm just like, why do I continue to care if you're going to continue to treat me like that? All I'm going to do is vote my wallet and you're not getting another cent of my money.
Yeah.
So don't call me.
In reality, the biggest issue is just the regionality is just further dissolved, right? And it's really weird that you're going to be seeing just these, I don't know, it's probably going to be like relatively empty games. At least on the West Coast, right? For all these teams that are kind of nomads right now. So, I don't know. It just takes away from the fun. I mean, I enjoyed watching the UConn game last night. Like, I mean, we occasionally play weird teams with small stadiums, and it's kind of fun. But, I don't know. It's just, look, it's simple. It's the SEC's fault, and it's the Big Ten's fault. They rated big players. It dissolved those. It just set this in motion where the Pac-12 then dissolved. Now we can say it's the Pac-12 commissioner's fault for missing a layup deal.
The alliance.
Well,
it was the alliance's fault.
But we know that was stupid because soon as they said there was nothing in ink, everyone said, "Well, that's nothing then." And it was the dumbest.
That's the point. They aligned themselves with the Big Ten, and the Big Ten, meanwhile, is going behind the back of the, hey, UCLA, Southern Cal, come us.
Yeah, but you know, the ACC should have been doing the same thing. They should have said, hey, Texas, Oklahoma, like, why don't you come here? Maybe that will restructure our deal. And then you'll be in a better conference. You won't be losing in the SEC, which is going to happen. And, you know, you'll be the big dogs. I mean, I just can't wait. I still think in 10 years, you're going to see Texas turn into like a 7 or 8 win team. Like, I don't see how they're going to survive in the SEC. Oklahoma, right?
I get it, right? They're going to have to schedule chumps because nobody wants to see these teams all be 6-6 or whatever it's going to be.
But here's what I think is going to happen. Stupid. I think they're going to leave the SEC. They're going to go in, get their teeth kicked in, take the money, and then when it comes to renegotiation time, they're going to say, this isn't working. Like, no. We suck. I think they'll leave. I guarantee it.
I don't think so. I think you're more likely to get the two big conferences to absorb a few more teams and then break into regional conferences and come back to basically where we were again. It's just going to be less teams.
Yeah, but the whole thing is there's – if Oregon and Washington can't get a full share, why is any other team getting added to any other conference? Like, the SEC is probably going to look at it and say, everything is watering down our payouts. And we do not need it. We are literally the power player in football. So I don't see why they would do it.
The other part of it that's stupid, too, is that they're giving ESPN basically all the leverage in all of this, right?
Oh, yes.
ESPN, right at kickoff yesterday, cuts off their relationship with Spectrum. Right? They've been in negotiations, blah, blah, blah. And it just at the last point, they're just like, like, again, they're doing it for their bottom lines. I get it, but it's extremely frustrating that you're just letting these people make these decisions when, let's be honest, by the time the ACC's grant of rights is up, television is not going to be anywhere near what it is right now. And I don't understand how they're still letting it dictate by markets and this, that, and the other. The money is overinflated. It's going to come back to earth. I think it's all ridiculous that we're reacting this way to, you know, this kind of expansion. Is they're letting it happen. And I just, again, no foresight. To me, the biggest thing is no, it's all reactionary. There's no foresight. There's no what's best. Like, even Chancellor's response is just like, it's a bunch of nothing, right? There's no, again, it's just, I wouldn't trust any of these folks to run my business.
Yeah, because they're not business people,
right? But that's what this is, right? They're treating universities like it's charity work, but it's billion-dollar businesses.
Right. But I mean, like with sports, right? They are taking all the money and not having to pay their actual employees that actually do the product, right? Like, so it doesn't surprise me that they constantly make decisions that don't make any sense from a normal person's look at, well, if I was running this business, I wouldn't be doing this. This hurts my brand. What is the value? Again, yeah. I think the ACC probably over the last 2 or 3 years has said, okay, well, let's, especially after USC and Cal or UCLA were bolting. I'm sure they said, hey, what would it look like if we grabbed some of these teams from the Pac-12? And then when they went to ESPN and said, if we add Oregon and Washington or Oregon, Washington, Cal and Stanford, what does that do? They would have said, we'll give you $35 million or $25 million, whatever they pay out right now. And that's it. We're not going to change the deal. And so from the ACC's perspective, they're the only ones, from my view, that at least came out and I guess made more money in the last little circle. And I just don't think they had a choice. And I think the reason it took so long for this to even get passed is because everyone kept looking and saying, this is stupid. I mean, the nice thing is you got SMU to give up 9 years of TV revenue.
I think you have some rose colored glasses on for once. If there's 12 teams that said, let's do this from the beginning, I don't think it's because of their lack of options. I think it's because of their lack of brand and they realized where they were in the pecking order and that they had.
No. Yeah. Yeah. I'm talking about the four that held out. I think those four, I will say the four that held out got the deal better than it was. Those 12 were going to take anything, right? You'd probably be getting full shares for Cal and Stanford right now if those 12 had their druthers about it, right? So I think the other four kind of held out and kept pushing back. And like I said, at least, I don't know what the final amount is for Stanford and Cal, but they did say that SMU went from 5 years to 7 years to now 9 years without TV revenue from this deal, which is crazy.
It's so stupid. This whole thing's stupid. I'm tired of talking about it. I want to get to actual football.
No!
It's because this thing is dumb. And it's frustrating. And I know everybody's frustrated. Nobody wants to hear about it. So let's actually talk about this game that we had last night. Pac wins 24-14 on the road against UConn in maybe not the prettiest game in the world, but in the end, it's a win. And pretty doesn't matter, right? Maybe UConn's better than we think. I think my big takeaway is my phone was blown up from people like, defense is terrible again. And then it's like, well, what's wrong with the offense again? And I'm just like, it's one game, folks. So I'm going to caveat everything I'm about to say that it's like, I get it. It's one game. It's not too big of a deal, but there are some specifics we want to talk about. I'm not jumping off the ledge. I'm still on my 12-0 is still right there for us, right? It's still a possibility. We're 1-0. We won a road game. I'm going to guess that UConn's better than they were last year. So, yeah. All right, one game. But my takeaway is there's still a lot to work on, right? I think the defense, outside of giving up essentially two plays, held UConn to pretty much nothing. They had a long play and then their scripted drive in the beginning. Clearly those were the two scoring drives that they had, and they had nothing in between. I mean, they threw for 113 yards. They ran for 160, was 71 of those were that one long run from that dude running down the sidelines. Yeah. Like, so UConn did nothing. Essentially, NC State wasn't pressuring them. They kind of sat back and just let them dink and dunk that first drive. They gave up that little they ran the same run play all over again. It was like watching the 2021-2020 NC State team would just run zone left, just kept running zone run to the left all day, right, behind Icky. It's kind of what they were doing as well. I'm not too concerned with it. The offense in the first drive, our drive, was exactly what we wanted to see. Tempo, spacing, constant pressure on the defense. And they didn't really try to do that the rest of the game. I feel like it was a lot of, let's see what this guy can do in live reps. They had heavy rotations. I mean, we ran four running backs and then Armstrong. There was nine wide receivers used. I feel like they were kind of testing a lot of people out. Nobody got a lot of, you know, dominated any position. So I'm not too concerned. Obviously, there's just some things to work on. Excuse me. Sorry. Some things to work on. The offensive line got to shore up a little bit. I think Armstrong might have been quick to run, and he had said that's what he said in his post game. But at the same time, I wonder if he's just, you know, has felt the pressure in practice. He knew he's got a shortened clock. Kind of a little bit. What are your takeaways there? I'm just kind of rambling now.
Well, I think there was a comment either from, I think it was Dave after the game that said, you know, in practice and in the scrimmages, that he basically couldn't run because it was, you know, as soon as he ran or got touched, it was over. And so he said that, you know, Brennan was kind of telling him, you wait till we get in live game, and you can see what I can do on the ground. So I think they were happy with that. But I mean, I'm going to go back to like two pods ago. We said, you are what you are in these opening games. The whole, like, I hope we're just being vanilla is usually just a hope.
I don't buy that. I don't buy that.
Hold on.
Yeah, sorry.
What I was going to say is I rewatched the game last night. So I listened to the game for three quarters, got home, watched the last quarter, then rewatched the game immediately after. Every single thing we were doing was short and quick routes. It wasn't until like the third quarter that we took a legitimate deep shot down the field and immediately got a pass interference out of it, which is what we always say is why you should do it. And so my theory is they were working on the short stuff. They're probably not 100% comfortable with the deeper routes yet. It was on the road. They didn't quite know what to expect. They didn't want Brennan Armstrong to throw picks. It was a classic Dave Doran, very conservative road script that worked relatively well, though it was a little butt puckery after the first drive. And I would expect it from their perspective, they're probably happy with what happened up there because they moved the ball relatively well. They didn't put anything on the film that's of much use. And they confirmed mobility in a certain couple players, right? Figured out if one or two guys were going to show what they do in camp, shows on the game film, which I think like Casey is a good example of that. And they barely repped Penix. Rosner, I don't feel like was in until the second half, really. That's when I started noticing him. And you didn't have to card Collins in. So I think from their perspective, they got out of there relatively healthy, except for Ashford. And they really just did not have to put anything out there. I do think the offense will look a little different. I still think it exposed a lot of concerns about the offensive line. I hated the short yardage plays. You know, yeah. It's like every year we do the same thing. Let's get all our guys bunched up and show how tough we are. And then it's like our offensive linemen don't even put their arms out. I mean, I don't know what was going on. And there was also just some confusing personnel rotations. And I'll end on this because I know now I'm rambling. But like short yardage on the goal line, at one point, I think we had a redshirt freshman walk-on tight end in there blocking, who probably did a great job in camp, and I'm sure they repped this play, and it worked. But I was just sitting there going, you know, it's 10-7. You need to freaking score. Is this really the time to have a backup walk-on tight end in blocking? And is that an indication that maybe some of the Zebras are dinged up, so maybe it's just out of necessity? It was just super weird, and I can't stand bunch formation short yardage plays. And yeah. If you're going to do it, just let Brennan Armstrong do it. I don't know why you're trying to get the running backs in there on a slow developing handoff. It's just so weird to me.
You know what that's going to do, that bunch formation? I thought about this last night. They're going to run that against Notre Dame. They're going to bunch up, and Brennan Armstrong's going to bootleg that one out, and he's going to be wide open.
Or they're going to pop, or they'll pop pass it. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Like that had to been, that had to been a setup, because a couple of those formations were just like, what the hell are you doing? Yeah. You know you're not good enough in the trenches, and even against UConn, and you still try some of that stuff. Like it almost felt like shades of last year. Like, all right, we're not really comfortable with the entire playbook yet, so we're gonna use a little bit of what we had last year because these guys know it. And it's really what a lot of that stuff looked like. They did run a few mesh routes, which I love to see, getting guys in space. They did. I don't know how many times. I don't have the drop back count, but you know, Armstrong says he had 26 pass attempts, but he dropped back probably 45 times.
Yeah, but some of that was designed.
Yeah, some of it was designed, but a lot of it was his 19 carries. I think were just like, I'm tucking and running.
Yeah,
but quite a few of those.
If you watch a few of them, especially in the first quarter. Maybe it's like the second or third play. I mean, he drops back. They've got I don't know if it's four verts or not. They had four wide. And I mean, it just looks very obvious that they basically wrap the ends around, open up the middle so he could just go run. Like, so I mean, he's back there. Maybe it's an option. And if someone's loose, he can throw it. But there were a bunch where I thought it was just clearly a designed run. And, you know, I think they knew. I think they respected the defensive line that UConn had. I thought the UConn defensive line was much better than I certainly expected. I think that UConn team is a lot better than last year. You know, I didn't watch second half UConn. I don't know if you did last season. So maybe this was brewing the bowl already. Game.
Yeah.
You watched them in the bowl?
They got better. I know everybody's going to look at their schedule last year and like, oh, they didn't play anybody.
They were better. Yeah, they looked to me, they were very ECU-like. It's a very big, important game to them. They obviously were studying all season. The other factor, too, is they had a new coordinator. I don't think our defense had any idea what to expect at first. They seemed very on their heels. Probably it was a two-part, probably overconfident from fall camp and then unsure of what was actually happening. And then after that first drive, I mean, it was a completely different ball game for the defense. So I think it was set up well.
Yeah, that first drive, obviously, you know, the scripted drive, but they ran trick plays. They had throwbacks. They did everything they could.
Yeah.
To score on that drive, right? That was clearly set up.
I mean, that team couldn't throw a forward pass last year, right? So it just looked different. I'm sure at the end of the year, I mean, UConn, I think maybe their schedule is harder. I need to go back and look at what their actual schedule is, but that was a better team. It was a good road test. It was a weird spot, especially with all the unknowns for us. It was just very strange to me that we were like almost on purpose not throwing the ball downfield. And then the one drive, you know, it's 10-7 in the third quarter. I feel like Anai was like, I think we have to do something. And then they just throw a bomb immediately to Timmons. He gets pass interference. They throw it. The next play was like a 17 or 19 yard pass play down the middle. And then they just started chewing it down, moving down there. And then before I forget, one thing I really liked was like relatively clean game penalty wise. I mean, I think we had one false start and that was a wide receiver. But last year, remember all the penalties, the false starts that the offensive line was having? Like that was nice to not see.
Correct. Agreed. Yeah. They gave up. They had one penalty, didn't give up a sack. I think the one penalty was actually on Timmons moving at wide receiver position.
Yeah.
You know, it's. I'm not one to evaluate the offensive line play. I'm not well versed in that, but I don't think they did some good things. They did some bad things. Obviously, it's a work in progress. They need some more bodies. So we need Cooper back. It hurts losing Jaramillo. We're going to need some of the young guys to play well. And I think, you know, there's room for them to get better. It's not all hope is lost, but it's just, it is what it is. There's some needs for improvements there. And I think we will see it. I don't think we were stressed ever in that game, despite it being close for a little bit. I think they were testing out, you know, kickers and testing out positions and rotating guys and just trying to feel themselves out for the first time in, you know, this season. And we were talking about this in the pod chat yesterday, that it almost looks, if they were smart, teams would schedule a preseason game. You know, the basketball team does it with their closed scrimmages and stuff like that. But State should get a preseason game somewhere. I think all schools should probably do something like that, right? But, I mean, they use these games for that sort of purpose. I also want to dispel some of the nonsense that I kept seeing on Twitter mostly last night. It's like, this is Dave Doran. This is Dave Doran's footprint all over it. Dave is not calling plays. I don't think Dave has any interaction with Anai when the offense is going. He might tell him what he wants to do in terms of, you know, how aggressive to be and how and things like that, but I don't think there's any communication that Dave is putting his thumb on the scales of the offense to like do more of what we saw last year. Like, let's do this again. Like, I think this is a team going through some growing pains, trying to learn a new system. That's all it is. It's Dave. It's Dave. I was like, it's not, man. That's I genuinely think Dave lets his coaches coach. I don't think there's much interaction there other than, you know, he said, and Dave said it before. It's like with Tim Beck, he was just like, you know, Tim asked me if I wanted to do this. And I said, no, let's do X or whatever. Right? There was very little interaction of Dave saying you have to do this. And I just don't think that's it. I think we are where we are. But
I think he sets the tone for the game plans. And so yeah, that to me. Fair. Huh?
You said, yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Like to me, it just looked like every other NC State road game plan I've seen all these years. Right. Minimize risk. You know you're better than this team. Don't make mistakes. As long as you're not making mistakes, everything will probably work out. I mean, maybe it's because I wasn't watching it. I was just listening to it while driving. But at no point was I, like, worried. I rolled my eyes a few times, especially at the short yardage outcomes. But at no point was I like, man, we're screwed, right? Or, like, when UConn did that pop pass run into each other fumble and we recovered it and then it was overturned or not even overturned. It was just it's called dead. Yeah. I wasn't like, oh no, that was huge. We're going to really regret that. But, you know, we just rolled on and I think got him tackle for loss on the next play. Now I will say after watching that back live, that sure as hell looked to me like the receiver caught the ball, got hit by his player and then fumbled it. So I'm kind of surprised. I don't think we had a single review this whole game. Right?
Like, I don't think so either. Yeah.
I don't think there was. And then I kept thinking, I was like, are we not revealing things? Cause this is at UConn and like, is this like not set up? Like, it was just really weird. It was just no one even paused to say, maybe we should take a look at that. Maybe that's in the new rules. Oh, and let's talk about that. I, for one, thought it was freaking refreshing for this game to kind of fly by the way it did. I like
the new, but it didn't help my over.
That's the thing is, like, if I was anyone, I'd be betting unders all season, right?
Yeah,
like,
I didn't realize how fast the game was going to move. Now, granted, we ran the ball 46 times, right? And only had 9 incompletions. It was a lot of moving clock, but yes, I agree with you.
But even that, remember what I was talking about on the last pod was we're not going to be as sideline dependent. So the throws we were making were not as much into the, like, right on the boundary as they were last year. So even when we were making first downs on pass plays and moving the chains, right, it just kept going. I just thought it was refreshing. Well, while I was driving, I was like, you know, the next iteration of this is to go soccer style, and we do, like, 30-minute quarters that are just running clock the whole time with stoppage time for injuries that we just then add on at the end of the quarter. Like, I love it.
Who does stood out to you? All right, back to the game. Who stood out to you?
KC. Yeah. Brandon Armstrong running. I'm still looking forward to Timmons. I'm not going to hold the drop against him. Michael Allen, though he needs to work on blocking. Trying to think who else. I mean, defense, like, everyone looked kind of like they do. Oh, and that's the other thing. Did Savion play?
I don't see.
I don't think he did. Anyway, so there's upside there. Yeah, KC, I thought, looked legit. And I don't know. I Lassane looked like I thought he would. Very curious to see how his reps go the rest of the year.
I really like KC. Everybody else has said it. Like, he seems to be a little different. He made things happen after the catch. He was good in space. I mean, he just, everything about him was, you know, you can see why everybody talked about him beforehand. Michael Allen is clearly the best running back on the team. I'm guessing there's some blocking issues there, which is why he only got 4 carries, but he was 4 for 30 with 7 for 7.5 yards per, 3 receptions, 27 yards for 9 per. Like, the kid, despite him looking like he's running in slow motion, is fast and moving faster than everybody else. And I think he is our best back.
Yeah.
Delbert Mims got a lot of snaps. Which,
touchdown.
Okay. Yeah, he did get a touchdown.
What do you think of Julian Gray?
Julian Gray is clearly fast. He's clearly quicker than most people. And
yeah.
His lack of usage, 2 receptions for 14 yards, is still baffling to me. They tried to run
Keon Lassane
in an end around, and I'm like, why isn't Julian Gray getting that? He's clearly much faster than Keon Lassane.
Well,
I don't know.
Julian Gray got like 10% of the targets. I don't know how many passes we actually had, but you know,
17 receptions.
It was how many attempts? Was it like 23 or
26,
something?
26 yeah. attempts.
Well, here's what I liked. Kickoff return, right? Willingness to run. What I didn't like. Athlete. Punt return.
Dude, yeah, so
that's leaving
some to be desired. Jalen Coit. First of all, putting a guy who's an unproven wide receiver at a critical position like punt return, to me, I think is, I don't know. I want to see what he's done in practice to earn that position. I think he, you know, let some balls drop. I don't know if that's, again, the lights came on. He wasn't sure what to do, but he had some drops in the game. I think his decision-making on the punt returns was kind of questionable.
I think he did a good job judging the balls that were going to be touchbacks. It just felt like they were like, hey, Jalen, unless they kick it real low to you and you get it, it's fair catch. Don't touch the ball. Right? Like, it just didn't look like we were like, we're not even going to try and get a yard on a punt return, which, okay, fine. It just felt like it was kind of a missed opportunity. And there's definitely one or two where I was like, oh man, I really feel like he could have got that. And
Last one in particular, I thought he had some room to run.
Yeah.
And he called a fair catch.
That's the one where I thought it's like they're telling him don't do it.
Yeah. I mean, feel like Julian Gray would be the one to be back there.
Yeah, I just liked that Julian Gray was involved in the pass game, and it wasn't just, you know, throw him a screen behind the line. I don't know. Yeah. I was happy with the young guys. I really liked between Gray, KC, and Timmons. I liked what I saw. I don't know if Anthony Smith was on the field at all.
Don't think so.
Yeah, and I think they're holding Collins out a little bit longer. I was really surprised in the red zone that I think Rosner only got one target on like a fade.
They tried to throw the fade to Lassane, and I'm wondering, like, what are you doing?
They've done that. You got the 2 years in a row,
but whatever. Yeah,
it's because he can catch it. I get it. He's got really good hands.
Yeah,
I know. But it's already a low probability throw. It is the dumbest play. You know, from a outcome expectations. So,
second dumbest to them bunch formation from the 3 and trying to sneak it. You're like, what are you doing? What is that?
Doing that? That's the
that's terrible.
Who's the Philadelphia quarterback?
The Philly special.
Yeah, nonsense. Yeah. Just push the butt in.
Defensively, I thought they looked pretty good. I think they were over pursuit. I think part of that was. Mm-hmm. Being amped up, you know, early on they were running past holes. They weren't staying sound. They settled down, which we thought they would. Sean Brown, Jakeen Harris got hurt, I think. But Sean Brown played a lot of snaps, and I thought he did okay. He had a bunch of drops. I feel like he could have had three picks in that game. But otherwise, yeah. the defense did what they were supposed to do, right?
I thought Poogie was going to have a pick on that one deep ball.
Yeah.
Aiden
Hutch had a pick on that one they lobbed in the first quarter, but it's just a jump ball. He didn't win. Nobody won it, but yeah.
Yeah, I think that'll improve. I mean, I really liked Peyton Wilson making the play at the end of the game. Love that he just slid down better than Leary ever could. That was classic old man, please, I've made it through the game slide. Because I feel like year one, year two, he's going to try to house that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I'm sure all the people with the over were like, please, please go for it. I don't think there's anything to take away from the defense again. I don't think they knew exactly what to expect. I thought it was a really good opening series play call from UConn's perspective. And I'm still worried about us facing Notre Dame. I just think that's a tough matchup for the 3-3-5, but I think that's also, you at least know what you're getting with Notre Dame. I feel like that first couple drives, they were not quite sure. And what I really appreciated at least was trick play wise, they seemed to be in position every time. So, you know, just kind of speaks to the discipline.
Overall, are you backing off of your win total prediction?
I don't know. Are we going to throw a forward pass more than 10 yards? I don't think so. I mean, I still think the floor is there. I'm really curious to see how the rest of the ACC teams play. I don't know, man. It was just really weird watching a team not throw it vertically, especially for a guy that we think loves throwing it vertically in an eye. So come to me after Notre Dame game.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm typically not a fan of the, you know, we weren't trying to show anything. I feel like this team could have used to the opportunity to just get in rhythm, find a flow. But, you know, there's also, I do understand, like, don't put the things on tape. I just don't know how much I buy it.
I mean, UConn was definitely just sitting back trying not to get thrown over. I don't know if, kind of like, I think we talked about this last pod. Defensively, there's only like one or two good teams on the schedule. So other teams aren't going to be able to sit back like that either and just let us run underneath it. And eventually one of those guys is going to pop one on the on those crossers. There were a few times where I was like, oh, you know, Michael Allen, if he doesn't step out, I think he's got a touchdown on that one play, for example. So,
yeah.
I think there's still plenty of upside there for the offense. We're going to have to increase the risk a little bit and not play like that all year.
A buddy of mine texted me during the game and said, this reminds me of Jamie Barnett's teams. And I know a lot of y'all, well, we got some older listeners, but a lot of people on the Twitters and the pod chat wouldn't get that reference. Jamie Barnett is a guy that, tough as nails, just had to do absolutely everything for that team. And I feel like Brennan Armstrong is that. I mean, I'm watching that game like that. He's spot on. That's the right analogy there. It feels like we're going to win or die with Armstrong. And so he might have some games where he does throw some ducks to get picked, but he's also going to win you some games because he's going to grind it out. And we saw him grinding things out yesterday.
I think Doran called him a linebacker at quarterback.
Who did?
I think Doran called Brennan Armstrong a linebacker at quarterback. So
we know it's what Doran liked. He loves Jordan Lynch. He talks about Jordan Lynch any moment he can.
You know, I mean, it was very Jacoby Brissett to me. Like, Jacoby was more polished as a passer, but very much like, I'm just going to go get his yards on the ground. I'm going to be efficient with it. I'm going to take smart shots, and, you know, maybe we'll get a deep ball. So I love this style of college quarterback. It kind of reminded me of like how Sam Howell had to run that last year at UNC. I'm not saying they're the same as a passer, but it was just very eerie of, I better go do this. I can't rely on anyone else right now. And I also do wonder if, I think Carter was at left guard. I do wonder if Cooper coming back, because I think he was on the starting five at the beginning of camp. So I do wonder if you get Cooper back, if that kind of helps the interior, and maybe that will help those tackles. But I think it's just going to be a year where you really need a very mobile guy, and that's Brennan Armstrong. And I hope he lasts 12 to 14 games.
Yep. All right, we'll leave it at that. Let's enjoy the long weekend.
Hell yeah.
Don't have to stress. You can watch the games.
You can hate watch everybody all weekend.
Yes, right. I'm going to hate watch the heck out of South Carolina beating up on UNC. Let's go. Yeah, it'll be good. There'll be some good games to watch. But yeah, stress free weekend. So I hope everybody has a long weekend. We'll be back next week. And as always, go Pack.
Yeah, go LSU. Go Duke. Go Gamecocks. Go, I don't know who else. And go Pack. I was raised by the wolves.